It was just meant to be a short walk by the sea. At the paint-peeled sign Vidalia's Beach, Meredith drove towards the coast and took the high road that cut along the granite cliffs. The way was fringed with cedars on her left and sheer drops to the ocean on her right, and she followed it to the abandoned lookout on Grasmere Point, where the broken boards of picnic tables strike the ground like fallen crucifixes. When her tires hit gravel, she stopped. That was where they always stopped, she, Charlie, and Evelyn, for one last look at the sea. The wooden steps to the beach were hidden by an overgrown hemlock, but she found them, cracked and wind-worn and still solid, so she took them down to the shore and walked to the steady pulse of the surf. As daylight faded, images of an open casket punctured her thoughts. The funeral director had followed every instruction, a Hermes scarf around her neck, lips painted a rich Chanel red. With an anguish that sucked the air out of her, Meredith pushed away those images and tried to think of earlier days, when the three of them walked along Darley's Beach together, watching the autumn storms roll in. She paused. She passed the rock where they sat on the afternoon of her father's memorial service. The search team never recovered his body, and that fact, the lack of a body, made becoming an orphan even worse. Now, Meredith is orphaned all over again. She looks up, her face wet, but sees only darkness. Night has fallen. The moon rakes the beach like a searchlight, seeking out the bleached bones of driftwood. Then the clouds shift again and drape the shore in black. She peers into the darkness pooling around the cedars that edge the beach, their lacy leaves twitching in the shadows. She scans the beach for landmarks, but the shifting moonlight disorients. She doesn't know this place. She's wandered too far. The car is miles away. Her throat constricts and she thrusts a hand in her pocket. It's a reflex, still deeply coded into her, the unrelenting need for a quick high. She doesn't find pills, but her fingers touch cool metal. Her phone, it's been off since the funeral. She presses the power button, facing down the cedar forest, just in case, she thinks, as the waves crash on the sand behind her, just in case she isn't actually alone. Her phone jumps to life with its harsh blue light. As texts pop up, fear floods through her. At what point did her body become auto-set to panic? She can't remember. Was it in the hospital morgue when she saw the first dead woman sliced open, or when the body count kept rising? She squints at the bright screen. 10 texts, 7 in the last 2 hours, all from Leo. Call me at 8:20. Then at 8:45. Need to talk. She keeps scrolling. At 9:10, where the fuck are you? The wind is rising and waves pummel the beach. She can smell another storm rolling in, but there's something else in the air, a hint of sweet rot. The light from her phone finds the remains of a gull at her feet. Its eye is a black hollow. Seaweed circles its neck. The cedars creak in the wind and her hands shake as she scrolls through more texts. When she sees the last one, there's a pivot. Deep down, like the bottom of her belly is twisted around her spine, cold liquid trickles down her back. It's there, in Leo's last text, the name of the victim. A twig snaps and her head shoots up. She turns to run, but the sand is deep and sucks at her feet. There's a pounding in her ears. It's the surf and the sound of her own blood pumping. She tries to run faster, but the wind throws its whole weight against her. It whips at the top of the waves, sprays salt water in her face, and then rounds back for another go, wrapping her coat around her legs. She tastes blood. There's the taste of blood in her mouth, the sound of blood in her ears. She trips on driftwood, and just before she falls, sees a bloody cross cut deep into soft flesh.